and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
All right. It is it's a little chilly, man, tonight. I don't know. I'm cold.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm cold in my house. I don't have the heater on because, like, I'm one of those people, I'm stubborn. I won't run the heater unless it gets, like, 45 degrees. You know?
Yeah, it's got to be pretty cold.
But, yeah, for some reason, I'm chilly. So maybe it's just old man moment and being I'm cold today. Yeah, I don't know.
Some people just get cold, man.
And
you know?
And, yeah, maybe so. And, man, and I'm sitting here looking at my computer desk and, like, I don't know, the kids drop things off. There's a hair tie here. There's nail polish. So it's mostly Waverly that drops things off. It's like, what? I'm like, what's all on my desk? I don't know.
I didn't leave that here.
Yeah, I'm like, I wasn't painting my nails in secret or anything.
But, oh, man.
But, yeah, man, it's been a it's been like one of those weeks that I know we just, you know, we record every week, but it feels like, I don't know, this felt like a very slow week. Like,
yeah.
It feels like I haven't talked to you in like 2 weeks, even though I know I have.
It felt like a lot of time has passed. Yeah. I agree with that.
I don't know why. I mean, like, it was nothing special happened this week. It was pretty normal. It just felt very slow. But it is Friday night, and, you know, we're going to give a shout out here in our show. Our other co-host Long, who is of course taking a little bit of hiatus from the show right now. It is his birthday weekend.
Yeah.
So we want to wish him happy birthday. And it feels weird not doing a movie pick with him, because usually we always get to pick our birthday movies. But
you know how he feels about Tom Cruise. So doing a Tom Cruise movie,
that's right,
kind of feels like it's good timing.
It is. It's a tribute to you, Long, for loving Tom Cruise so much.
Uh-huh. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
I mean, you know, other than that, he would have had us doing the Godzilla movie where weird worm things squirt sperm out of their things to fight Godzilla. That was really strange in the movie he had us do last year. Yeah,
that was weird.
I know it's his favorite movie of all time, and I'm not knocking the movie. I enjoyed watching the movie, but I'm like, that part was weird. Like, you know, I felt like they were shooting sperm at Godzilla. I'm like, what's going on here? This is strange. You
know? What were they thinking when they did that?
Yeah,
like, we're going to have these weird tubular-shaped creatures shoot white gunk out of the tip of themselves.
Dude, there's so many. You watch a lot of those 70s flicks, man. There's some weird shit, and not just Godzilla, but just a lot of movies back then, man. Like, what were the kind of drugs were they on making those films back then?
Cocaine, baby.
Some weird stuff, man, in 1970s movies. Mm-hmm. You know, but other than that, man, doing all right. You know, this, of course, is the Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Mark, and you already
this
heard
Matt.
From Matt there. And but happy birthday, Long, for real, man. We
happy birthday, Long.
We love you, bro, and you know, we're glad you're finally getting your pubes and turning 40 something.
40-ish.
Yeah, we got to knock him a little bit, man. You know, his. And he's not on the show, so you know you get your balls busted. You know, that's what it is.
That's how it is, man. How it is for all of us.
We're gonna have a little cookout for him tomorrow, which will have already happened by the time y'all hear this episode, and sure, some laughs and memories will be made, and it'll be a good time. So, but yeah, man, how are you been, man? Your week good?
Yeah, week's been good. I didn't get to watch as much stuff as I wanted to. I was going to go to Tinseltown and Cinemark and watch Megan, but the wife wanted to watch Megan, and it's her birthday week, you know, or a birthday month, you know, whatever the ladies like to say, you know. We get like half
a
day.
It's nice to be the whole month.
Yeah, I know, right? And then for us,
half a day, man. If we're off the day, once breakfast is done, it's like, okay, you're done.
You're done. Yeah, I fried you a couple eggs. You're done. That's it. But no, she wanted to go see Megan, so I didn't get to see it. And but she's usually a pretty good judge of a movie, and she said that it was not bad, that it was entertaining but predictable. So I guess that means it's a solid horror flick. I was surprised to see that it was rated PG-13, and she actually said that there's a 3 or 4 year old sitting next to her in the movie theater watching this movie, which I don't know if I would go. You know, not all PG-13 movies are created equal. Mm-hmm. You know, a PG-13 slasher, you know, is not the same as Avengers Endgame.
Right.
You know, so don't recommend taking your 3 or 4 year old there. For anyone who's thinking about it, don't do it.
Yeah, that reminds me. I never forget, man, when I saw the Passion of the Christ in theaters, and there's this family sitting in front of us, and they have these kids are probably 3, 4, 5 years old, and
yeah,
and the scene where Jesus is beaten, they're like forcing the kids, you need to watch this. This man did this for you, and they're like turning their kids' heads and facing them. I was just like, the fuck, man. It's like these kids don't understand this. I can't, as an adult, it's hard to comprehend some of those elements of whether you believe in it or not, of what's going on on the screen. That was a bizarre theater. It is, you're right, to see kids in situations like that, whether it's a PG-13 or a hard R, it's like, makes you think about things. Like, and it was really weird. They were like literally grabbing the mom and the dad were both grabbing their kids' heads and like forcing them to watch the screen as Jesus is beaten. And I was just like, what the fuck, man?
Wow.
That was bizarre.
Crazy, man. That's like, if the kids are, kind of squirming watching it, it's like maybe just, they've got the point. I mean, maybe they got the point.
You've seen the movie. I mean, that was a tough scene for adults to watch. I mean, that was
rough, man.
Yeah, it's like, ugh.
But, anywho, I was able to, with your help, Mark, and thanks for lending me your Paramount Plus account, I was able to watch a couple movies that came out this past year. I wasn't able to watch in theaters. One of them was Devotion. It follows a fighter pilot. I believe it's Jesse Brown. Jesse Brown. He was the first black naval aviator commissioned in the Korean War, and which is pretty cool because I believe both my grandfather and your grandfather. Did your grandfather fight in the Korean War?
No, mine was World War II.
World War II. Okay. Yeah. So, there's not a whole lot of Korean War movies. Most of the Korean War movies were made in black and white, and there hasn't been a whole lot of recent ones. And it was cool getting a Korean War movie. It's shot pretty good. I like all the water they're crossing. Obviously they're disembarking on a naval vessel when these fighter planes are going up in the air, and everything looks good. I think the dog fighting and the naval aviation fighting is not as good as something recent you might have seen, like Top Gun Maverick. It's not as good as that, but it's still a good movie. It looks good. There's a lot in there about friendship, and who Jesse befriends, and it's all a true story. They even cite the facts at the end of the movie and give you some still shots of the actual fighter pilot and what happened, and his significance, and turning the tide of the battle in some instances. So he was a good pilot, it was cool watching it. So it's on Paramount Plus. If you're interested, you like war movies, you want to see this one, I think it's a good movie to watch. I don't know if I would buy it and own it. I don't think it matches up to Saving Private Ryan or any of those. There's not a whole lot of there's not a whole lot of trench warfare. I really like seeing that trench warfare kind of stuff, like in Saving Private Ryan, and this movie just doesn't have that. You may find this movie better, than what I'm rating it as, but I think it's a solid B, maybe even a B minus, just because it's lacking some more action than I think it should have. But it's meant to be more of a motivational movie, given its title. I mean, you probably get that, Devotion. It's not as direct as like Saving Private Ryan or 1917. I guess it's more of an inspirational title. So check it out. It's on Paramount Plus. I also checked out Nope, because why not check out a horror movie? And that's a movie directed by Jordan Peele. And it's about a phenomenon that's happening at a farm, is what I gathered from the trailer. And I thought it was aliens, and it's a little bit different. It is an alien, but it's very, it's been out for a while, so I guess I can talk about it. The hat, it's like this giant saucer that goes through the air, but it's, and people think it's a ship, but it's not really a ship. It's a creature that is territorial and it eats things in its territory. The actor who played Glenn in Walking Dead is in it. I like his character. It's got this creepy scene in the beginning where a chimpanzee that's part of a kid's show goes crazy and starts biting its the show actors and kills them all and kind of goes crazy. And it's a creepy, it's pretty creepy. I don't know why after seeing this, people were trying to say that Jordan Peele was the greatest horror director ever. It's a film that doesn't really make that case for him. I like it. I don't know if I'd watch it again. And he is good at directing horror, but like he said, John Carpenter's the best, you know, and insert, you know, or Wes Craven, you know, you could probably put Wes Craven ahead of him. I think Peele's going to be up there eventually.
Hitchcock.
Sure. Yeah. Hitchcock, you know, he's probably in the top 10 right now. Like maybe 9 or 8. But you know, there's still plenty ways to go. But enjoyable movie. It's on Paramount Plus. You can check it out there. Other than that, I really wanted to watch The Last of Us, and I'm upset that I did not get a chance to, because yeah, right whenever I was going to watch it, I remembered I had to make potato salad or else it wasn't going to get done, in time. So I had to make that potato salad for tomorrow. Yeah.
You're slacking.
I was slacking.
I did watch Last of Us. I'm going to talk about it in a minute, but I'm going to first talk about a movie I actually just finished today. I started last night and I had never seen this. And that's The Way of the Dragon, Bruce Lee movie where he fights Chuck Norris at the end. And I always wanted to see it ever since we got to see Chuck do his panel at Compalooza a few years ago. And he talked about when Bruce called him in and he goes, "Oh, you want me to be a movie? We're going to be a team up or something." And Bruce was like, "No, we're going to fight each other and I'm going to kill you." And Chuck was like, "Whoa, I don't like that idea." But yeah. No. And so I finally watched The Way of the Dragon, which is Bruce Lee's wife's favorite movie of his. I found it okay. It's shot, you know, it's all shot where they dub the voice in later and stuff. And it's well choreographed as most Bruce Lee films are. You know, it's the fight between him and Chuck at the end is awesome. Interesting because you know, the movie we're doing next week, the original film of that series was filmed guerrilla style, which we've done on the show before, and that was Mad Max. And they actually did some guerrilla style shooting in The Way of the Dragon. And I realized like they weren't really allowed to shoot in the Rome Coliseum, so they were given like 2 hours to go in and shoot real quick while people weren't there, and they were told not to mess with anything, or you know, so it's some semi guerrilla. But they didn't really have permits to do it, but they got permission to use the Rome Coliseum for a couple hours because I guess the people that were in charge knew, oh, this is Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris. Of course you can use it. but it was cool. I bought it on Vudu has a bundle for sale for like $10, man. And it has a Game of Death, Big Boss, Fist of Fury, Way of the Dragon, and the documentary of Bruce Lee. And it's like 5 movies for $10. I bought that. I was like, you know what?
Not that a bad, bad buy
for all those films. And that was the first one I watched in the bundle. Of course, I've seen Fist of Fury. We covered it on the show last year. And I've seen that documentary before on Netflix about his life, but I remember it being very good. So I was like, you know what? It's worth having that. So it's good stuff, man. You know, Bruce Lee was a phenomenon that was going far too soon from this world, but he left such an incredible legacy on the earth. So good stuff there. So I watched that and I watched one more episode of Cobra Kai, and we'll have some Cobra Kai news later here in just a little bit, but man, this fifth season feels like a struggle. So I'm kind of glad the news came out today about the sixth season, cause it feels like, okay, it's time to end this thing. But I did watch The Last of Us, man. And this is a show that I've been waiting a very long time for, a huge fan of the games. Even though I haven't finished the second game, I'm still a huge fan. And the premiere was everything I wanted it to be. It was perfect in a lot of ways. I mean, if you're a fan of the games and played them, you see all the little things they put in the show. It definitely, I mean, maybe it's jumping the gun, but it looks like it's definitely broken the curse of video game adaptions. And critics have already seen the first three episodes, and the reviews are through the roof, even past the first episode, saying that they really seem like they got this right. And any people that were concerned about the casting of Pedro Pascal as Joel, thinking that he didn't look or feel the part, it goes away very quickly. 10 minutes into it, you're like, okay, he's Joel. And that just shows
you. The clips that I've seen, you know, obviously I've never played the games, but I found out, well, to speak to the accuracy, I guess in the game, the crops are what infect everybody. And they don't have pancakes in the beginning. Right. The daughter doesn't eat the oatmeal cookies. And then Pedro Pascal's character forgets the cake.
Yeah.
And so they don't have any of the flour, which would have infected them. So I like that they, you know, these directors are really paying attention to the accuracy. It makes me wish they would maybe do a Resident Evil film. Take these same directors and apply that, you know?
That's already been out there. There's memes already out there saying, hey, Netflix, this is how you do a video game adaption. And they show Last of Us up here, Resident Evil down here. The thing is, too, about The Last of Us, and it's hard to describe it in words if you've never played the game, but I'm sure some of our listeners have played the game, is that it was such a different video game experience since came before. And sure, there's been games that have been very cinematic, like the Resident Evil games or the Metal Gear Solid games. But there was something about The Last of Us that transcended that a bit. It really felt like a movie playing out. And the only times you felt like you're in a video game at times are when you're having to stop to upgrade your weapons or search through drawers for things you need. But the whole time, the rest of it, you really feel like you're in a movie or a television show. So it always felt like The Last of Us would always have adapted so well to the screen. And it looks like it has. And it's on Sunday nights on HBO Max. And the first episode was outstanding. I let Michael watch it. You know, he's 14 now and he's played some of the games and he thought it was really good too. You know, maybe it's a little violent, a little language for that age group. But, you know, if he's old enough and mature to handle it, you know, I think it's fine. He watches it. I don't think I'd let young children watch it because it's pretty intense. But yeah, man, I am super excited about this. It gives me something to watch, you know, until Yellowstone comes back. And, you know, because I don't follow a lot of TV shows anymore. You know, some of the Disney Plus and the Star Wars. And until Mandalorian comes back, which, you know, it's coming back soon. And I think that's a good lead in. Let's talk some news, man. We got a new trailer this week for The Mandalorian Season 3. You know, it's fucking Star Wars, man. Give it to me. Let's go. March 1st. Can't wait.
Yes, sir.
Looks like Mando is taking Grogu across the galaxies for further adventures as he tries to return to Mandalore to ask for forgiveness for his transgressions against the clan of the Mandalore. It looks like some exciting things are going to happen, man. People are freaking out over the scene with the Jedi in it, but I mean, I'm willing to bet that's a flashback to Order 66. I mean, you know, I just, that's the vibe I kind of got. Could be.
That could be it.
Cause you know, we know Grogu was at the temple. It's kind of been revealed. So maybe they'll show the full story of how he was able to escape, during, Revenge of the Sith. But yeah, man, I can't wait, man. I'm pretty excited about it, you know?
No, it's like you said, it's Star Wars, man. And Mandalorian has not let us down. So, come on, March 1st can't come fast enough, man.
Yeah. People were upset that Dave Filoni is not directing the episode this season, but hey, he's working on the Ahsoka show, you know? I'm sure Mandalorian Jon Favreau, it's in good hands. Yeah, I'm not too worried about.
It's going
to
be okay.
Yeah, Bryce Dallas Howard's coming back to direct the episode. She's done a couple of really good ones. A couple other names on there have done some episodes in the past. It'll be fine. I'm sure Filoni and Favreau know what they're doing at this point, you know? I mean, I think they've been successful. Even people that didn't like the Boba Fett show as much, overall, it was still a success for Disney. And You know, I've so far I've liked everything they've done. I'm fine with it. Yeah, so I'm good with that. And I mentioned Cobra Kai earlier. Netflix announced this week the season 6 little teaser came out, and I actually didn't watch the teaser because I haven't finished season 5 yet. And they announced it's going to be the last season of the show. I think that's a good idea because it's one of those shows that we've talked about this before. It should not have worked. The idea on the surface, like, this is stupid, but somehow it worked. But mm-hmm. it only works to a certain extent. It's this fifth season has felt like a chore to watch. It feels like it's kind of getting repetitive. I think it's time to end it, you know.
The first couple seasons were pretty good.
Yeah.
Free season 1 and 2. And then, you know, it's season 3 wasn't bad.
Right.
You know, but it's like, it's definitely kind of gotten out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like.
Yeah.
It's even more ridiculous than I think it needed to be.
Exactly. It's one of those things that it's like, you know, it's run its course. Let's end it, tell a good story and be done with it. You know? And I think that's where we're at that point with it. And that's fine, you know, but, they didn't give a premiere date of season 6, but, a lot of people were saying this summer, so pretty soon.
Makes sense.
You know, Mark Hamill, he hasn't spoke a whole lot about Kevin Conroy other than paying tribute to him. And he was asked, I'm not sure what he's doing interviews for. I think he's got some movie that's coming out on one of the streaming services. I think he actually appears in. And asked about, would he play the Joker again? And he basically said, you know, anytime they would call him for a project, he would ask, is Kevin doing Batman? They would say, yeah. And if Kevin was in, I was absolutely in. He said, but now that Kevin's not here, he goes, that my Batman's not here. So I don't think, I don't plan on doing it again, anytime soon or if at all. And I'm paraphrasing what he said, but you know, it just puts into perspective of, you know, sometimes we take celebrities for granted, you know, and how big they are to us, but man, they're humans too. And Mark lost a very close friend in Kevin, and you know, he just could not feel that he could do that voice of the Joker again without his Batman by his side. And I think that says a lot, you know, the importance of how big Kevin Conroy is.
Yeah. He said that he felt like there wasn't a Batman out there for him. His Batman's gone.
Yep. And that's fair enough, you know, to be said. Steven Spielberg kind of let loose. He was, he's out doing, he was at the Golden Globes or one of these award shows, you know, his movie, The Fablemans, which I want to see, waiting for it to go streaming though. You know, he's at, and John Williams, of course, scored The Fablemans for him. And there've been lifelong friends, you know, going back to doing Jaws together and Raiders of the Lost Ark and E.T. and numerous film projects. And he let it loose that he's making a documentary about John Williams' life. And that's cool.
Wow.
I mean, what a better way to tribute the maestro, John Williams by making a documentary of his life. Cause it came out, they jokingly said, hey, are you going to make a live action movie about John Williams or a autobiography? And Spielberg's like, no, we're doing something better. We're doing a documentary about his life. And, that's really cool, man. I would imagine, it's gonna be full of great stories of these two guys and the things they've been together. And of course, you know, he scored the movie we did last week, Catch Me If You Can. You know, he did Raiders of the Lost Ark, Star Wars. I mean, you name it. John Williams has been a part of pop culture and movie history as much as anybody in the last, 40 years. I mean, or plus, I mean, is there a bigger composer than John Williams? I mean,
I don't think so.
Yeah, no, he's,
I think, yeah, I don't think you can come close.
Mm-mm. And, you know, with Spielberg involved in producing the documentary, you know, it's going to be a special project, and, looking forward to that for sure. Did you watch any Invincible on Amazon? I think I watched like the first episode or two.
Sure did. I watched it all.
Did you? And it's kind of just been sitting there. People wondering what happened to it. Well, they finally announced that season 2 is coming later this year. You know, it's from Robert Kirkman, of course, who created The Walking Dead, and he also did the Invincible comics. And so season 2 is finally coming. It feels like it's been a while. I, you know, imagine various reasons why season 2 has not been out yet. But Invincible fans, you'll finally get your second season later this year.
Finally.
And, man, this has been a long gestating rumor around Disney as if they were ever going to make another Tron movie. And it looks like it's going to happen. Tron 3 is finally going to happen, called Tron Ares. And it's going to star Jared Leto, who was apparently a huge fan of the series. And Jared Leto has been pushing for this project to be made for the last couple of years. And Disney, didn't seem to have interest. And I can't help but wonder if this has to do with Bob Iger stepping back in and saying, yeah, let's go make another fucking Tron movie, you know, because people like it. And I've always thought the Tron concepts are really cool. Both movies, Tron and Tron Legacy, are both entertaining in their own right. Maybe they're not perfect movies, but they're cool ideas. It's a cool series. I'm down for it.
Yeah, I mean, we could definitely stand for another sequel. I would welcome it.
Yeah, and Jared Leto, you know, he's become a good actor in his own, despite, you know, making Morbius, what didn't turn out the way that people wanted it to be. But with Leto behind it. And I can't remember who they said the director of the Maleficent sequel, I think, is attached to direct to it. You would think that as successful as Top Gun Maverick was, that you would ask for, I don't want to say his name wrong, so I'm going to look it up. But he directed, Tron Legacy.
Okay.
And I can't seem to type. Here we go. What's his name? Joseph Kaczynski. Of course, he directed Top Gun Maverick. He directed Tron Legacy. So with his success right now, you would think if you're making a Tron 3, you would think Disney, with all their money, would call them up and say, hey, you want to come make Tron 3 for us after your success of Top Gun? But who knows? Maybe they're going a different direction. Or maybe they did call him. His price, asking price, is too high. You know, I just made Paramount $1 billion. You know, you better pay me some money. Who knows?
Yeah, dude, pay the man.
But Tron 3 is coming to theaters in the next couple of years. That's cool.
That's cool.
And then last bit of news I have, and Dragon Ball Super Superhero is finally coming to U.S. Blu-ray on March 7th, I believe it was. I didn't write down the date, but people have been wondering that. It seems like it's been a while to announce a release date, but there's finally a release date for it to come out in the U.S. on Blu-ray, because it already came out like right before Christmas in Japan on Blu-ray. So people were like, well, where's the U.S. release? But apparently it is coming. I'm sure Funimation will probably have it for streaming soon. What's up with that? I thought Funimation was going away. It was all rolling into Crunchyroll.
I thought so too. That's what I'd been told, because I told someone that I had a Funimation account, and they're like, oh, you should just go Crunchyroll.
Well, see, that's now what I did.
Funimation's still there, you know?
See, I canceled Funimation and I have Crunchyroll because I thought it was all rolling over. But Funimation's still there. So,
yeah. Yep. And Crunchyroll's still there.
Yeah.
So it's like one of them's got to go away, I guess. Or maybe they just both stay again. I don't know.
Maybe they're ripping people off.
Maybe so.
And just like, we're just going to keep both services going and these suckers are going to pay for it.
They're like, no one's canceling their contract.
Yeah. Now they need to just, Crunchyroll needs to get off their high horse and put a uncensored section on there. We'll be good.
Yeah, that way we can tell, what's adult and what's not.
I mean, it's so weird because Hulu, which is owned by Disney, they have uncensored anime on there, but yet Crunchyroll is still over here, like, saying we're the anime kings, but yet everything's censored. Like, come on, man. Let's get with the times.
Yeah, dude.
If I want to watch Bikini Warriors uncensored, I should be allowed to.
Bikini Warriors.
Oh, that's another thing I watched. I watched the first episode. It's on Hulu. Have you ever heard of High School DxD?
Yeah.
Dude, it's like...
Is High School of the Dead?
No, that's different. There's two different shows. This is High School DxD. And it's about a bunch of perverted boys who are always trying to hit on the girls at the school. And then this demon shows up and kills this one guy. And it's bizarre. And it's all fan service anime, lots of tits and ass. But I just watched the first episode out of curiosity. But yeah, there is one called High School of the Dead, too. It's a different show, though. So completely different things. But anyway, all right. Well, today's featured film, in tribute to the birthday boy Long, who's not on the show.
Yes. Happy birthday, Long.
He loves Tom Cruise so much. And even though he did admit that Top Gun Maverick was a badass film. And he'll watch Tom Cruise films. He just, has to, I don't know, what's his word that would be for Tom Cruise for him?
I don't know. He just doesn't like, he's not like a huge Tom Cruise fan. He's always, I don't know. Every time I mention Cruise, he's like, oh, yeah, Tom Cruise.
But
that guy.
But today's feature film is the directorial debut of J.J. Abrams. So at this point in his career, had only been done television. You know, he'd done Lost and Alias and a few other things. And so he made his film debut directing this movie, and that is Mission Impossible 3. The third film in the saga, which people credit for saving the saga in a strange way, because Mission Impossible 2 was not as well received by critics, but yet made money. So I'm not sure.
In a different way.
Yeah.
In a different way, saving it. We'll get into that.
Yeah. And, because all the movies in this franchise have made money so far. But it is kind of credited with bringing the franchise back around and saving the franchise. And it stars the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman as the villain. Billy Crudup is in there, and Lawrence Fishburne. Of course, this episode of the saga introduces Simon Pegg's character of Benji into the saga. Well, I don't know if I call it a saga. Mission Impossible into a series. Yeah. Mission Impossible's not quite a saga. It's more of a series.
Yeah. And,
but in this movie, it's also told differently story-wise than some of the Mission Impossible films, as far as the way it opens up, where we see Ethan Hunt is been captured by the villain of and what's Philip Seymour Hoffman's character's name? I'm drawing a blank here.
Owen Davian.
He's captured by Owen Davian with Cruz's. We find out very quickly that there's a girl across from him. We just assume that it's someone very important to him at this point in the movie, and he threatens to shoot her, and he does go to shoot her, and all of a sudden it jumps the Mission Impossible theme, and you're like, whoa, what just happened? You know, so it's kind of a different storytelling element. Then we go backwards.
And medias res.
Yes. And then we go back in the film to see what all led up to this, as we find out that Ethan Hunt has tried to settle down his life after saving the world from Chimera in part two. And he's looking to get married. And that's who we find out who the girl was. And of course, his friends in the IMF all warn him against this, saying, you know, you can't have a regular relationship and do what we do. And as we find out, he gets called into service to rescue a friend of his named Lindsay, who's found some information that seems very vital, and she ends up losing her life over it as she gets this information to Ethan. And we find out that there's a rabbit foot that Owen Davian is after, and we don't know what the rabbit's foot is, but we just know that it's Benji that kind of reveals that whenever you hear about stuff like this, it's mythological, that it's end of the world kind of stuff, you know? So it's very dangerous. So they decide to go after Davian and get the rabbit's foot and stop him. But things ensue, of course, as they capture Davian initially. But this guy is so – his network is so strong in the people he has, as he's an arms dealer, that he is rescued in an incredible freeway sequence in the film, which is one of the best – one of the better action sequences of all the Mission Impossible films. It's really well shot by Abrams and really well done. And then he gets out and he turns the tide against Ethan Hunt as he – captures his soon bride-to-be and pushes Ethan's hand to bring him the rabbit's foot. And of course, you know, Ethan saves the day by the end of it and rescues his soon-to-be wife with some thrilling sequences of explosions inside people's heads that he has to turn off just in time. And we never do find out what the rabbit's foot is, but that's kind of the whole point in the movie, is that they go on these missions that sometimes you just don't know what it is, but, you know, you still save the day. And, you know, my first thought on this is, for a directorial debut, this is a pretty stunning, you know, I mean, for a first time director, J.J. Abrams does a hell of a job with the camera in this movie, tells a fantastically fast paced story that, never gets lost in itself. It's not so fast paced. You're like, wait, what's going on? It's well told, well acted throughout it with some good actors, extremely thrilling sequences, but yet he still manages to get all the tropes of the Mission Impossible franchise thrown into there. So, you know, you're still in a Mission Impossible movie.
Yes. And instead of the first two, which kind of felt like a James Bond film, mm-hmm. kind of like a Brosnan James Bond film. And this film really just turned the tide, you know, with Cruise, you know, watching TV, seeing Alias. He said, I need Abrams. He goes, he gets Abrams. And what does Abrams do? He takes emotion and he immerses it with the action. And that's what keeps you engaged in this film. You have emotional connection within this film. Who's this lady in the beginning of the movie? Mm-hmm. I don't know, because Abram friggin' takes a Shakespearean action term and uses it for a Mission Impossible movie, and it's great. You see Philip Seymour Hoffman, boom, you're engaged with the movie. You don't know what's going on, but Tom Cruise is not the confident Ethan that we see throughout all these other films. He's first he's threatening, and then he's begging. And he's super concerned. He's at the end of his rope, it looks like. So you're like, man, what's going on? And you find out, you know, he's retired after Chimera and he's training agents. And like you said, trying to find that normal life, finds out he can't have it because people are going to find out who you care about, no matter if you're Spider-Man, Batman, or you're Ethan here. And that's what Abrams does a really good job about doing, not just shooting, but making sure there's that emotional connection that keeps you engaged within an action film. It's the difference between, Commando and this film. As much as I love Commando, you can't always, having a bunch of, explosions and guns going off is great and it can be entertaining, but it doesn't keep you engaged like, what Ethan has at stake, losing his friends, losing his wife, having people you care about put in danger. That's a whole nother thing. And Abrams is really good at it, especially at his first, first go around.
Yeah, no, I agree. You're right. It's, one thing I could take away, the first Mission Impossible film definitely felt more like almost like a James Bond type adventure. The second one was definitely a John Woo production where Ethan is a little bit more over the top, almost superhero like. You never felt like Ethan was in any real danger in the John Woo film. And I like the movie just because I'm a huge John Woo fan, as anyone listening to those knows. So I find a lot to like in it, but I can agree that it's not this. There's no stakes to it. You never feel like Chimera is actually going to be released. You never feel Ethan Hunt's going to get hurt in the movie. You never felt that Naya was going to die. It just felt like this glorified more Ethan Hunt superhero movie. And now J.J. Abrams comes in and immediately, like you said, in the opening sequence gives a emotional resonance to it where you're like, oh shit, Ethan's in danger, and you buy into it. And Owen Davian Hoffman plays him so calm, cool, and collective that you believe that this guy, you kind of buy into like this guy's going to fuck shit up. And the whole movie, because they keep the rabbit's foot a secret, you don't know what it is. Is it going to, what's going to happen? And so it gives this intensity of this film throughout it. And then when he escapes on the freeway, you're like, oh shit, man, this guy's for real. This is a equal to Ethan Hunt, for once. And I love the freeway sequence. I think it's an extremely
well shot
action sequence. A lot of fun. And then you got this guy who's not only Owen Davian, a evil son of a bitch. He's smart, man. He uses these explosives inside their heads and he puts one in Ethan's head at the end of the film. And you almost, think for a moment, like, man, are they going to kill Ethan Hunt off? Because there was talks about early on that, Ethan Hunt would die on screen and they would pass on the franchise to someone else, but now 7-8 movies in, Tom Cruise is still doing it, but there was talks of that one time. So you're like, yeah, maybe they will kill him,
For real. Yeah, they could have. It would have been a whole different kind of film, I guess, kind of like more like a Bourne film.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, then Lawrence Fishburne's good in this movie. I almost forgot Lawrence Fishburne was in this movie. Mm. And of course, without this film, we don't get the Ghost Protocol. I'll definitely say that this film made it to where we got Ghost Protocol. One thing I didn't know is that I guess because Abrams is going back and forth between doing Alias still, he's still got to finish the last season of Alias, even though he's directing this film, and he's doing Lost, and you had different people that were going to stand in for, I'll call her Felicity, or was it a
Terry?
Yeah, was Scarlett Johansson gonna be her or gonna fill in no. for his wife, or was she gonna fill in for Felicity?
I think it was Felicity. Yeah.
And then Carrie Ann Moss was another
Russell's
one.
Russell's the actress's name.
Is that Trinity?
No, Carrie Russell's Felicity.
Oh, yeah. Carrie Ann Moss was going to possibly fill in. But then, you know, because of all the messing around at the time and being available and not being available because of Alias, they had to pass over.
Scarlett Johansson was cast in the film early on, but pulled out.
I thought it was because they were going back and forth.
Yeah. She pulled out of the project and we'll eventually, you know, I mean, I would never pull out a Scarlett Johansson. But anyway, that's another story.
Yeah. Oh, man. But man, it's got the best, like, the intrusion scene. It's like, I know the first one in the first movie was great, but the Vatican scene is probably my favorite one out of all of them. It's just... it's got cars, it's got explosions, it's got the face mask, the voice recognition. It's got so much. And then trying to time the cameras, it keeps you on the edge of your seat. And it's probably my favorite of that and the intrusion scenes that he has to do.
Yeah.
Where he has to break into a facility.
I can agree with that. I think it's every Mission Impossible film has a great breaking into somewhere scene. And the Vatican one is good. I think it's only topped possibly by the Rogue Nation one where he has to go in the water cell and he's underwater. That probably tops this
as far
as security. But this one's still really exciting and good because because it's just the way they have to do it because the Vatican security is really tight and they have to be really slick about things. And the way this guy Davian is maxed by his people constantly. So they had to come up with the right plan to pull him in there and get him out. You know?
Oh yeah. That was pretty ingenious how they did it. Pretty ingenious. And then they slipped through the sewers and the friggin' Ferrari explodes. Is that a Ferrari? It's an expensive car.
And Maggie Q's like, man, such a nice car.
Yeah. Had to blow it up though. Oh man. But this is a great film for many reasons. It's good on so many scales. And to your point, Mark, it didn't make as much as the other films.
Right.
It underperformed as far as the box office. But you know, as far as setting a new tone and setting a new expectation and kind of showing us, a better take and approach to, a Mission Impossible film,
mm-hmm.
It's high marks on that.
Yeah.
For keeping the franchise going, of course.
Yeah, I think this is definitely the MI film that set that standard to where we are now after Fallout. It the first one is good for what it was, and the second one is the John Woo film, and we've covered both those on the show. But the third one kind of Abrams and Cruise's team set the standard for what was expected going forward as far as high-paced action, big action set pieces, and allow Brad Bird and then Christopher McQuarrie after that to direct their films mm-hmm. with the same sense. It's almost like you could start the series with three, and three through six all have kind of the same feel to them because they kind of got the format down. Maybe that's a good word for it, starting with this film.
I could say that, yeah.
But the movie was successful enough overall, though, that it allowed them to keep making them. And of course, like you said, we were able to get Ghost Protocol and then Rogue Nation and Fallout. And now we're sitting here waiting for Dead Reckoning this summer, you know, which I can't wait to see. I mean, that looks, a lot of people think the new trailer is probably coming possibly during the Super Bowl. So
that would be good timing for that.
Yeah. And, cause you know, it's coming out in July, I believe, you know, Dead Reckoning Part One.
And so you got to get something soon.
Yeah, and get a new trailer soon because they put out the first trailer with Top Gun Maverick back in May. You know, to get the hype train rolling for it. We talked about this franchise a lot and how successful it's been, and you know, people, I've ran into people at work like, oh, well, I don't like Tom Cruise, and I'm like, man, but you're missing out on good films if you don't give the Mission Impossible franchise a chance. I mean, they really have been solid, and they keep getting better and better. And if you wanted to skip the first two, it's okay. Start with three, man. This is where the franchise really kicks off. And this is also, not only is this where the franchise kicks off, you could argue this is where the franchise kind of gets a continuity. I mean, in the first three films, yeah, you have Ethan Hunt and Ving Rhames throughout them. But part three introduces Michelle Monaghan's character, who reprises her role later on as his ex-fiance. It introduces Benji into the series. So it introduces a lot of more continuity that flows, that goes throughout the rest of the films in the series. So I think you could say that.
Yeah, core team of IMF agents.
Yeah, you know, they didn't bring back everyone from this movie, but they, you know, a lot of them are still around in the series. And we didn't even talk about Billy Crudup in there. He's always a good actor when you see him on screen. Of course, he plays.
Oh yeah,
ends up being a corrupt agent by the end of it. You know, which is another Mission Impossible trope. You know, you always got these rogue agents and stuff like that. Sometimes people could argue that kind of stuff is expected, but I kind of like it. I expect certain things from a James Bond film. I expect certain things now from an Ethan Hunt film, that there's going to be a bad agent or things like that. It's like, that's what I go for. There's going to be a breaking in sequence. There's going to be a extraordinary action sequence, you know?
Get the checklist.
Yeah, you know? And I'm fine with that. You know, I don't mind checklist movies. If they're entertaining and tell good stories and they're a blast, I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, the last one, Fallout, is still one of the best action films of the last several years. I mean, Fallout was incredible. And I think they're going to continue it as the series goes on with these next two films, you know, and see what happens. But Mission Impossible 3, man, is a very exciting film. A hell of a debut for J.J. Abrams. In fact, it was the highest budget ever given to a directorial debut for a film at $150 million. Wow. You know, they normally don't throw around money like that to first-time directors. But you know, Abrams had a lot of success with his television shows and was building a name for himself. And, of course, you know, this movie allowed him to go on to make Super 8 and Star Trek. And eventually he's making a fucking Star Wars movie, man, you know. And I really like J.J. Abrams, and I want to see what he's going to do next. I know he hasn't done anything since Rise of Skywalker. He's been he was attached to some DC projects for a bit there, but of course, we all know what's going on over there at DC. And a
few changes.
Yeah. But I'm sure J.J., something will come up soon. I mean, you know, I always thought that maybe he was the way to get the Star Trek crew back together, was to bring J.J. back, let him make one more Star Trek film.
I bet that would be the smart move.
Yeah, I bet he could get Chris Pine and all them to come back together. But for a debut film, Mission Impossible 3 is solid. In fact, I saw on IMDb, it's sitting like at a 6.3. I'm like, yeah, that's a better film than that. I'd say it's 7.3, 7.4. I think it's a better movie than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I give it a pretty solid, maybe a B+, A-, you know? I think it's up there. Pretty solid film.
I would say, yeah, A-.
You know, I enjoyed
Almost it. Perfect. Yeah.
It's a fun movie. I sat and watched it last week. I think I got up Sunday morning and watched it. And a lot of times, sometimes I'm so busy during the week, we do these podcast movies, and I watch an hour here, an hour there, watch them over a couple of nights. But no, I got up Sunday morning and blew through Mission Impossible 3 in one sitting. So,
and nice.
So it grabs you and gets your attention and watch it. It kicks off unofficially our little mini threequel trilogy that we kind of did by accident over the next couple of weeks. We were making the list of movies. We're like, oh, that's funny. We're doing three movies that are the third part of these sagas. This Mission Impossible 3 is probably arguably the best of the three that we're going to do. But there's things to like about the next two. And for the second part of this little mini threequel trilogy, we are going to cover next week Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
The world had been through a trial by fire, and only the greatest warriors and their deadliest enemies emerged from the flames.
Who are you?
Nobody.
No, mister. I can feel it. The dice are rolling.
He was the one they called mad.
But he's just a raggedy man.
But to those whose lives hung in the balance...
Where's the waiting ones?
Waiting for what?
Waiting for you.
He was the one they called hero.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time's here.
Now, Mad Max is back. in Beyond Thunderdome. Gibson, Tina Turner, Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome.
Yes. Welcome to Barter Town. And
Master Blaster.
Yeah, this one is known for being a little more kid friendly, as they have kids in the film with Max and Tina Turner, of course, is in the movie. It's definitely got a different feel than the Road Warrior or Mad Max did, but it's still a fun
definitely.
Movie. And you know, this, we will have covered all four Mad Max films after we've done this. So we've had them all covered, but, it's been a while since I've watched this one. It's probably the one I'm the least familiar with out of the four films because, you know, it's okay, you know, but I'm still kind of looking forward to watching. It's got some good moments in it.
Yeah, it ain't bad. You've got a town that runs off of pig farts or whatever, you know, so that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then you got Tina Turner.
Yeah. And did George Miller directed this one, too. Yeah, he's directed all the films.
In
the country. Yeah. But, you know, next week we're going to talk that. We're going to talk Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Beyond Thunderdome.
Which is
two men enter.
Yeah, George Miller. He had a co-director on this. George Aglinia. Yeah. I guess we'll have to look into that next week.
George and George.
So, yeah. So Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome on next week's show. But until then, man, the Rebel Radio Podcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. Links to all the apps that we're on to listen to the show. And we thank you, as always, for listening and continue to be safe out there. And that's all we've got today, man. No, nothing else. But until next time, man, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Go there and do it.
This is Chuck Huber. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.